Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're spending the next half hour or so talking about diabetes and the latest treatments available with our guest, Dr. Amrinder Singh. He is a family medicine doctor with Ascension, Wisconsin, in Mount Pleasant. So it's great to have Dr. Singh with us. We'll talk about GLP-1 drugs, continuous glucose monitors, and a whole lot more. And he's certainly ready to take your questions about living with diabetes as well. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. Dr. Singh, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Very happy to be here today.
How does diabetes occur in the body?
So diabetes, I like to describe it as a dysfunction of our metabolic system. That's a big generic way to look at it, but when we are taking in food, our bodies are just like automobiles, where we are utilizing that food as some sort of energy to continue our organs from working. In diabetes, what happens is there's a dysfunction of that metabolism, and that leads to the metabolic system unable to continue to use that glucose as the energy source in a appropriate way.
Yeah, and this we often hear pre-diabetes is this sort of on the way. What's the difference between pre-diabetes and diabetes?
So I think the best way to look at that, pre-diabetes is like your check engine is on, your check engine light is on, and you know that, hey, I have to get it checked out and make sure that, hey, everything is okay. And it'll kind of give you an alert like, hey, maybe you're missing some fluid or maybe you're missing this. So pre-diabetes is that the system itself is starting to kind of become dysfunctional. And then diabetes is it has become fully dysfunctional, and we need some sort of assistance to try to help control how we metabolize our energy.
Is it in, let's say you go to the doctor for your checkup, your annual checkup, is a check for diabetes typically a part of that?
In most cases, we do a fasting glucose, which is part of a bigger metabolic panel that we actually order. In some instances, if you have certain risk factors, such as obesity, a family history of diabetes, or other metabolic concerns, for example, hypothyroidism, hyperthyroidism, we do check a hemoglobin A1C, which is a 3-month average of your blood sugars.
Let's talk about GLP-1 drugs. They've been in the news a lot as a weight loss drug, but they were originally developed for diabetes, I think. Anyway, what is that GLP-1 drug?
So what GLP stands for is glucagon-like peptide 1. So basically how it works is it binds to these receptors, the GLP-1 receptors, and it leads to more insulin secretion from our pancreas and suppresses something called glucagon. Glucagon 1 expressed brings in glucose, so basically the sugar, glucose, into the system, which then creates more damage to other parts of the body. So the idea of this medication is to basically have some effect on these two different hormones and then help regulate the blood sugars, your appetite, and curbing hunger.
I'm sure I've seen the ads. What are the major brand names of GLP-1?
Yeah, I'm sure everybody has seen all the ads these days. But so most commonly, most people have heard of Ozempic and Wegovy and Trulicity, which falls under the generic name of semaglutide. or Mounjaro or Zepbound, which falls under the generic of tirzepatide.
How effective are they?
So they're as effective as people make lifestyle changes. So it depends on each person, depends on how badly their diabetes has become. So it's more than just the medication. It's dependent on your lifestyle and even other pre-existing health conditions.
Kevin in Krivitz has a comment for us. Let's go there. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
And what's on your mind?
I was pretty suddenly diagnosed with diabetes. I went from a A1C of 5.9 up to 12.5 over the course of a few months after getting really sick with COVID, and it took a toll on me. And I found that swimming really helped control my blood sugar, and I got into a routine that really helped keep my numbers down where I was actually reduced on medication. It worked out so well. I came up with such a good routine. I actually wrote a book on it called Swim Your Tail Off. I use a different word for tail, though. And it really helped a lot of people, just a book. It helps. I wanted to help people do what I did, where I reduced my medication and kept my blood sugar down. I lost 30 pounds, and I did it all in a tiny 15-foot pool. Like, you don't need a giant swimming pool to get a good workout and to help with your blood sugar.
Oh, Kevin, thanks for calling. Comment, Dr. Singh.
I think that's amazing. I definitely think swimming is one of those underrated activities, not just for losing weight, but also it uses so many parts of your body that your energy, again, going back to the energy part, if you're utilizing your energy, the swimming is one of those things that utilizes your energy in such an effective manner. And it's also often when we talk about chronic low back pain or other musculoskeletal things, aquatic therapy is very often recommended also. So definitely, I think that's amazing to hear that it's not only helped him, but he's also gone ahead and, you know, produced a book out of it. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. And it's pretty low impact. You know, you're not pounding your ankles and your knees,
mm-hmm.
But you're getting a good workout. So, Kevin, good on you. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Bill in Madison has a different kind of question, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I am a type 1, and I'd appreciate it if you can focus on your talking specifically about type 2. And see, when people listen to this, they say, oh, if you take Ozempic, or, you know, you don't have to worry. Oh, are you still a diabetic? You should exercise more. I'm 170 pounds, 5'10", and all of that stuff, and it's crazy. You know, so it's extremely important to all of us to know the difference between type 1 and type 2. The other thing I was going to share is taking care of it. For me, it's a lot more detailed. First, I was the first person in Wisconsin to get an insulin pump, and that was 1980. Still use a pump, and it's great. I was also in studies for the glucose sensor. And the biggest thing about the glucose sensor for me is the alarms of not just the highs, but the lows, and how important it is. And for people to know that, boy, I tell you, it has just made a huge difference for me.
Bill, thank you very much for calling. Raises a number of things here, and maybe we just start with type 1 and type 2 and the differences.
Yeah, so, I mean, agreed. Thank you for bringing that up. I definitely think that type 1 diabetes isn't often discussed. It's considered more of an autoimmune condition, as the pancreas does not produce, in a simple way, does not produce insulin for the body, and therefore we need exogenous insulin. In other words, we need to take in insulin. So as he described, using something like an insulin pump has become a very often used treatment for our type 1 diabetics. And yes, these GLP-1s have not been used or studied as much in type 1 as it is it's been used in type 2. And therefore, that's why it's also with the weight loss. And so, yes, I think type 1, I think we as a medical society need to do even more to try to find opportunities to see if, you know, maybe our type 2s are type 1s, or, you know, at a younger age, we typically see type 1s. But I think we've seen more and more type 1 diabetics being diagnosed at a older age.
Yeah. And those sensors that he was quite favorable about, the glucose sensors.
So I believe how he was describing it was within the insulin pumps, they have a system within itself. So the insulin pumps have a kind of monitor on its own. So typically it may be connected in most cases to some sort of device, usually these days a smartphone. So that alerts you when you are low. And I think that's extremely important. We always have a conversation with our patients. We don't want them to be too high and we don't want them to be low. But if I had to make if you gave me a choice, I'd say I'd rather you be high than too low, because too low means you do not have enough glucose, in other words, energy for something like your brain. And so that becomes very important, especially with type 1 diabetics. Mm.
Janet emailed us, can a preteen male child be more susceptible to diabetes if they are overweight?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we have seen that our more and more of a younger population has been diagnosed with diabetes or pre-diabetes because of being obese or being overweight and lifestyle. So, yes, it is absolutely possible.
Dr. Amrinder Singh, our guest today, you can join in with your questions relating to diabetes at 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address talk@wpr.org. Someone else is wondering about the side effects of taking the GLP-1 drugs.
That's a great question. So side effects typically range from low blood sugar, so hypoglycemia. You can have nausea, diarrhea, and then, you know, bloating, abdominal pain. And some of those may present because one of the things that the GLP-1s does is delay gastric emptying. So that basically means that instead, it keeps basically the food in your stomach without, you know, sending it out to your small intestines and kind of furthering the digestion. So sometimes that can lead to some of these symptoms that we're talking about.
So all in all, for someone with diabetes, is it a drug you recommend?
Yeah, I think definitely it is. I'd say that it has opened up a lot of doors for a lot of different people, but specifically in our diabetic population, it has made a significant difference. So I do definitely recommend this for our diabetic patients.
But at the same time, I hear in over the last 20 minutes or so there that patient behavior can have an impact on how effective these pills could be.
That's absolutely correct. I think that goes to any chronic conditions, but when we talk about a metabolic condition like diabetes, it makes even a bigger difference. So, you know, incorporating fruits and vegetables and just fiber in general is extremely important. In the fiber category, things like fruits, vegetables, whole grains like oatmeal, lentils, beans, all of those are great to help your blood sugars. Lean protein like chicken, turkey, fish, low fat, high protein dairy, like eggs and Greek yogurt, all of those, if those are incorporated into your diet, that will definitely keep your blood sugars at bay. And then, as we were talking about before, the exercise. Exercise is utilizing your energy. And if you can utilize your energy, that can help try to change the way that the metabolic system is working.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think about symptoms of diabetes. And, you know, maybe somebody is out there on the fence about getting tested for it. What are the basic symptoms?
So most commonly, you know, I'd say textbook of these type of symptoms is feeling extremely thirsty, which I'd say is probably more than usual. Like if it's a hot day and you're drinking more water, that's one thing. But, you know, if it's if you're not sweating and you're needing to keep, you know, feeling like you need to keep drinking, that's one. Urinary frequency. So if you're needing to urinate often, that's another. Feeling fatigue. That could be another sign of diabetes. And even something called, eating too much, right? Just feeling like you need to continuously eat could be another sign of diabetes. So that's the most common textbook type of symptoms. Now, when sometimes your diabetes has been very uncontrolled and you just have not been diagnosed, you may get things like blurry vision, headaches, numbness and tingling in your extremities. Those may also be signs of diabetes.
How much exercise is good for or necessary for someone with, well, let's say pre-diabetes or diabetes? For example, do you need to do lots of cardio, or does going for a few walks a day help out? What's the advice there?
So I would say 30 minutes five times a week is probably 30 minutes a day five times a week is probably the most the best thing for everyone. I wouldn't even say it's specific for diabetics. As for cardio and strength, you can mix it up however you'd like. Does strength training have a lot of benefits over cardio? I'd say so, but I wouldn't want to put too much pressure that, oh, you need to do this much. But strength training, you know, the stronger your muscles are, the better use of energy that they use. So I definitely think strength training should be important, but cardio is also important. So trying to incorporate 30 minutes, 5 days a week, so about 150 minutes in a week is important. How you separate that out is completely up to you.
So you could go 20 minutes and 10 minutes and or the whole 30 at once, and, you know, that would do it.
Yes.
All right, that makes a lot of sense to me. I'm wondering, you know, sometimes people make assumptions about people who have diabetes, and I don't know that they're always correct. What, in your experience, what have been some of those assumptions?
I think the number one, when somebody gets diagnosed with diabetes, I think the number one concern is like, am I going to be on insulin for the rest of my life, or am I going to be on these medications for the rest of their life? And I think the way I answer that is it solely depends on you. If there was a lifestyle that brought this condition into place, now it's like, how do we fix that lifestyle so that in the future you don't have to be on medications and you yourself and the changes that you've made have changed that aspect. So I definitely think that those are some of the fears. And I think, you know, we just have fears. You know, you have a chronic condition and then you're like, oh my God, is this the beginning of the end for me? And I will tell people, no, it's not. It's the beginning of your new change. And I think that's the important key part to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think once somebody is diagnosed with it, it's a pretty big motivator, I would think, for changes. Do you find that in your practice?
Yeah, I've had great success stories where we've had patients who started off as one of the callers that said an A1C of 12%, which is very high. And recently I was able to see him and we were able to come to a point of cutting. We were starting at 3 medications and now he's on 1 and we cut that medication in half. So, and he made huge strides right off the bat. So yeah, I think absolutely there are opportunities to improve.
Do you see a lot of folks in your practice? You're with Ascension Wisconsin in Mount Pleasant.
Yes. And I will say that a good portion of my panel are patients with diabetes.
And if you are concerned about having diabetes, what do you tell your doctor? Just say...
Well, I think number one, it always starts off, and the best way is make sure that you're getting your annual physical. And if you are if you are having the symptoms that we discussed today, then I would make an appointment with your doctor and say, hey, I'm concerned that I'm having some of these symptoms, and you know, I may be overweight, I may be just not feeling like myself. And I think those are usual trigger words for most primary care doctors to be able to do further testing.
Yeah. Well, on that note, Dr. Singh, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. I think we all learned more, and I hope we have a chance to do this again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry. I really appreciate the time today.
Dr. Amrinder Singh, our guest today, family medicine doctor, works with Ascension Wisconsin in Mount Pleasant. It's great to have him on to talk about diabetes, and we'll probably be getting him back at some point, and we'll do it all over again. We're going to switch directions now, as we often do on this program. We go from one topic to another, and coming up next, we're going to take a look at agroforestry. Is it something you've ever heard of? Maybe you're practicing it. We'd love to hear about that as well. That's coming up next with our guest, Professor Michael Bell. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.